Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be learning Direi Hayomim Beis Perek Tes, the ninth chapter of the second book of Direi Hayomim. This perek is about Shlomo's name and renown in the world. It is comprised of 31 psukim and its parallel parasha can be found in Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud, and the end of Yud Aleph as well. The first section is dealing with the Queen of Sheba. So we hear about Malkas Sheva, the Queen of Sheba, who hears about Shlomo Melech and all the incredible things he does, and she came to bring him some riddles to Yerushalayim, and she brings a whole lot of things, gifts for him, spices on camels and precious stones. She brings everything that she can as gifts to her, and as she comes there, Vayaged lo Shlomo es kol devoreha, he tells her everything, meaning to say even the things which she didn't tell him, he was able to tell about her, and she is so impressed. She sees the Chochmah of Shlomo, the house that he built, and how he's served all the uniforms of his guard and his entourage, and all the different parts of the buildings, and she was stunned. V'loy haya od baruach. She couldn't breathe. She was so flabbergasted by the incredible power and organization. And she says to him, you know, look, I heard about everything that people told me about you, and I didn't really believe it, but now I see that it isn't even half of the truth of what really is. And she gives this most beautiful praise, Ashrei Anoshecha v'Ashrei Avodecha, praise you, praise your men, your servants, all the people who are able to be here and listen to your wisdom. And she gives a bracha to him that Hashem should be with him and give him everything he wants. And ultimately, she gives 120 talents of gold and all kinds of gifts, spices and precious stones to him. And then it describes that how he takes some of the wood that she sends and makes a ramp to the palace of the king and she brings with him all kinds of musical instruments that are taken into the area of Yehuda, which had never been here beforehand. And then finally he sends her off and he gives her a call, Cheftza Asher Shalah, everything she wanted he gave her, and she went off and she returned to her country in Sheva. So a lot of questions surround this. Who is this woman, this mysterious woman, the Queen of Sheba? So Barbanel says that she lives in the tip of the Arabian Peninsula, where Yemen is today. And the reason why she had heard about Shlomo was because of all the trading that was done in Ophir, that Shlomo Melech has his fleet in the south after conquering Etzion Gover and Eilat. So therefore she starts hearing through the trade routes about him and comes to visit herself. It is interesting that the Josephus puts her on the other side of the Straits of Tiran, not on the Arabian side, but actually on the African side in Ethiopia. She was apparently a queen of Ethiopia who came up because of the incredible ideas that she'd heard about Shlomo Melech. It's interesting to know that many other traditions corrupt idea, the story in Tanakh for their own. So for instance, the Quran does take her to be a woman called Bilkis and has a very interesting idea. The general theme of the story in the Muslim tradition is Shlomo Melech making her monotheistic. That's the main idea. But again, it's simply a takeoff of the Torah Nevi'im and Ksuvim as we have it. Similarly, we have also in the Ethiopian tradition, in a book called Kebra Nagast, The Glory of the King, they also have an idea where there's the Queen of Sheba called Makeda comes to visit Shlomo Melech, and ultimately he sires a child who's Menelik the First, is the first king of this tradition in Ethiopia. There's a lot of interesting, very interesting traditions which are related to this. Now, why is she coming to test him? So the Mefarshim generally suggest is that she can't believe the things she hears about him, because she thinks it's not possible that this is it seems supernatural. So she comes and brings him tests which she feels are only solvable supernaturally, not naturally, not through smarts. And that's what she presents, and that's why the Tanakh emphasizes the things in her heart, meaning things she didn't even tell him or ask him about, he was able to tell her. That's what the Malbim says, that Barbanel says, say as well. It's interesting that what were the riddles that exactly she said? There's a midrash in Mishlei, the very beginning, which describes the mishalim, the mashals that she asked him. So he has a few examples. Every time she asked him, "Can you answer me?" He would say, the response he gave was, "Hashem yitin chachma bipiv da'asas v'na." Hashem gives knowledge from his heart. That's the pasuk in Mishlei. So in other words, Shlomo Melech did not take credit for this. But a few examples of what she asked was, she said, "What enters 7 and exits 9? So he says, 7 are the days of Nida, and 9 are the months of birth. She says, what pours 2 and drinks 1? So he said that refers to a child nursing from the mother. She asks other questions. She says, a woman says to her child, "Your son is your father is my father, your grandfather is my husband, you are my son, and I'm your sister. Who are you? Who am I?" He says, "These are the daughters of Lot," talking to their children, to Ammon and Moab. So like examples like that, these are the kind of things that he would ask. She asked, she presented young children, all wrapped up in clothing, and she said, "Can you tell me who's a boy and who's a girl?" And he threw like nuts on the floor, like the which is the alternative of candy we have today, and the boys would just grab it and put it in their frocks, whereas the girls would take off their head, their handkerchief, and put it in that because it was a little more busher, a little more modesty there. It's fascinating examples that she asked as examples of the Midrash presents. It is interesting that that what was it that he gave her? It says everything she wanted. So the Malim says he took her to a royal treasure house and he said, "Take whatever you want." She brought a huge amount to herself as a gift, so he gave whatever she wanted. The Radak says specialties of Israel, things that she couldn't get back down south where she came from. And the Dat Mikra adds this, you know, some of the natural things germane to the land of Israel. Rashi brings a tradition, a Midrashic tradition, that in fact they had a child together, and that child ultimately became the patriarch of Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. So this was seen as a negative relationship in that respect as well. It's fascinating, if you go to the last perek of Mishlei, perek Lamed Aleph, it describes the words of Lemuel, the king, to his son, and he talks about how the Musar the mother gives to her son who's going to become a king. And what part of the warning is, "Al titein lanoshim chelecho drachecho limchos min al malkin," don't give your strength over to women who want to destroy you. And the next psukim are Eshes Chayel miyimtza. That's where Eshes Chayel comes from, and Shlomo Melech said it. And the Mikdash Melech Rav Yigal Ariel suggests that perhaps what's going on over here is that Shlomo Melech is reminiscing to this figure, this great grandmother of his, Rus, who came from the outside, came to Israel, and actually became the mother of Malchus. She was this incredible woman. And perhaps that image is in his head as perhaps he engages in this relationship with Malchus Sheva, the Queen of Sheba, unfortunately not successfully, which is what Rashi is emphasizing, that this relationship ultimately begot a destructive force which will ultimately destroy Israel. And that's perhaps Shlomo Melech retrospectively talking about the difference between the Eishes Chayel miYimtza and the warning of Al Titein LaNashim Chelecho, not to give your vigor to these women who want to destroy you, is perhaps reflecting on his own life as well. Just a fascinating closing of this point. The next thing we hear about in the Perek from Yud Gimel to Chof Aleph is the discussion about the riches of Shlomo. So we hear about him bringing in 666 talents of gold in one year, and besides so all the trade and so on, and he talks about how he makes these 200 golden shields that he placed around his palace. So we hear about his throne. His unbelievable throne was made of ivory covered with pure gold. It had 6 steps. Each step had 2 lions on each side. It had a golden footstool. It had a circular moon-like structure at the back. I mean, it was unbelievable. It says that no king had ever had a throne like this beforehand. And then it also describes the trade that the kings, the trade to Tarshish, a debated place where that is, Tarsis is on the Mediterranean, where it is. But they bring in all kinds of things. They bring in peacocks and apes and gold and silver and spices. All the trade routes are all open. It's unbelievable. So just a few things. Where's the money coming from? So the Rashi points out, if you take 120 from Hiram, 120 from the Queen of Sheba, all talents, and 420 from Ophir down south in the trading, that brings up to 660, and the extra 6 are not identified, but Rashi points out that's perhaps where the first year's worth of talents of gold, just to get a sense of what that actually means. in today's money, a talent of gold is worth is about 75 US pounds, 34.3 kilograms, which is equal to 1,094 troy ounces. A troy ounce of gold today in early 2021 is $1,807.85 for a troy ounce, turning into a talent is worth $1.9 million of today's money. And if Shlomo HaMelech brought in 666 talents of gold, we're talking about in that year bringing in $1.3 billion of today's dollars into Israel in this 1 year. Now, yes, it's true that there were exceptional prophets here from the Queen of Sheba and from Ophir, but one can imagine this is really an incredible boom for the economy of the nation of Israel at this point in time. What are the shields for here? They are simply decoration. They're not meant to be used because they're made of gold. Gold cannot be used in war in this respect. We're going to see later on they're going to be taken as loot by Shishak later on. The Chidah does point out that the word, in fact, the gematria of the 666 is tasur, is to sway, to swerve out of control. And that perhaps, says the Chidah, is that Shlomo HaMelech perhaps was unfortunately impacted by this, by all of this, these relationships and all this success, unfortunately. The symbolism of the throne, the Mepharshim debate, the 12 lions being the 12 tribes of Israel, each one on its own step, almost like the Choshen Mishpat, the circular structure at the back representing the Shemaim, sort of the horizon, as it appears to us as well. Very, very fascinating. A lot of the Barbanel, the Malim, spent a lot of time trying to work on the symbolism of every element of the throne. It's obviously meant to represent something metaphysical, not just physical grandeur. What happened to the throne? The Medrash in Esther Rabbah at the beginning tells us in Parsha Yud Beis, in the first parak, that that ultimately Sheshak, the king of Egypt, ultimately actually exiled it, took it to his land, and then Israel regained it later on, and until the destruction was taken by Nebuchadnezzar and ultimately went to Rome. And it's interesting that the Medrash points out that Ahasuerus wanted to sit on that throne but was not allowed to be sit on that throne because he himself did not have royal blood. He married into royal blood and therefore he was disallowed, which is why the word Malchusoy is spelt without a Vav in Megillas Esther as well. And finally, the last part of this parak closes with from Sukkim Chof Beis to Laman Aleph, we hear about the death of Shlomo. We hear about how there's so much wealth. He has so many horses. People are bringing him homage and paying him wealth all the time and visiting him all the time. And all the kings paid homage to him from the Nahar about Eretz Plishtim ad Gvul Mitzrayim. Really, the entire region is centered around Israel. And we hear about how there's silver and stones in Jerusalem are just really are in such proliferation. There's so much wealth around, and we hear about how many horses he has. There's a little bit of a discrepancy to earlier on in Sefer Melachim. The Mepharshim deal with it, and it concludes by saying the rest of the words of Shlomo HaMelech are written by Nasan HaNavi and Chia Shiloni and Yehdo HaChozeh. So the rest is over there. You can look at that. And Shlomo HaMelech ruled for 40 years over all of Israel, and like David, was only 33 over all of Israel, 7 over Hebron, and he passes away and is succeeded by his son Rehavam. Just a point to notice over here is these other words from Nasan and Achia Shiloni. Rashi points out the words of Nasan is referring to the whole episode after the Batsheva incident is omitted here, and also the Nevuah Achia Shiloni about the splitting of the kingdom is omitted over here. And the Chidah points out they're not only those, but also the sins of Shlomo HaMelech and all the problems that happened at the end of his life and his wives and all those complications. Those are omitted here. That's because Ezra's agenda here is not to give us the full history that we already have Sefer Melachim for, but what is the agenda he has to connect Shivas Tzir, the return to Zion, which is when Ezra is living, with the grandeur of the days of yore, and that's why he does it in such a way. This closes Perek Tes. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.